Ya lo hace. Pierna derecha, directo al arco. ¡Golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Friday, January 3rd, 2020. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins. As always, how are you doing today, Dwayne?
I'm well. That 2020, it still doesn't sound right.
We're in the 20s. Where's your hat, and can you we do the Charleston together or something?
No, but together, I can't dance, so it's fine, but yeah, the flappers are all in
yeah,
form.
Yeah, the fringe. Yep, it is 2020 for everyone. On today's show, we'll look at the FA Cup. Third round begins tomorrow. It's an FA Cup weekend. We'll have a little discussion on the CBA also. CBA will be a topic of discussion, and one of my bold predictions on yesterday's show, which if you haven't listened to, you can find on our archive on sportspodcastnetwork.com and anywhere you get your podcasts. Yesterday, Dwayne and I did do a 10 bold MLS predictions for 2020. One of them was regarding a work stoppages, and we'll go deeper into work stoppage later on. But Dwayne, I want to start the show, of course, inspired by Yimi Chera's signing by the Portland Timbers yesterday. Here's a graphic on everyone's screen that is from Nilton Jorge on Twitter. Nilton George, a Montreal journalist, he does some radio, and he created this graphic, which is in French, but you can see the mount and you can see the MLS team and the players. A lot of money spent so far in just a few months by MLS teams to get players in. Like, of course, Alan Pulido by Kansas City at almost $11 million is one of the famous ones. Yimi Chera as a designated player coming from Brazil, Atlético Mineiro from Brazil, with his brother, of course, Diego Chera. So there's a Chera Square in Portland. But inspired by them, I'm looking at this list. It's a lot of money for sometimes names that, like Adam Busca. Yeah, I never heard of him. But $3 million almost. But it is a lot of money this offseason so far.
Yeah, it is. And I think that if you're, we're going to talk to the CBA after this, and if you're someone who wants to be hopeful, that might be an indication that the owners are ready to move that number up a little bit further. So or maybe even add a DP slot, which would be amazing. But we'll see. So yeah, and it's an indication, I think, that MLS is looking at itself as being more and more a part of the world market. You mentioned these players, you know, don't have big names, and that's a real change from the past, where you'd have, you know, the Wayne Rooney's of the world coming in. And I'm not going to say that we're not going to have more of those type of players coming in, but I think more often than not, what you're going to have is sort of hidden gems out there that they might think that they can get some value from, and then perhaps even move them on again. And that's a real change in direction and philosophy within Major League Soccer, for sure.
Yeah, it is a different train. Of course, Lucas Cavallini of the Whitecaps coming from Mexico. And what I think is fascinating, too, is when you look at the provenance of these players. Let's look at the clubs, Dwayne. Before, we had, like, big clubs in Europe, players that were over 30 and even past 35 coming into Major League Soccer. Look at the age as well. The oldest one is Thiago Santos, a defensive midfielder from Brazil, going to FC Dallas from Palmeiras. Everyone else is between 19 and 30. And we're looking
at, that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing. But we're looking at the provenance of Mexico, Argentina, like young players coming from Argentina, young players coming from different place in Argentina, Denmark. We've got Spain from Villarreal, Christian Espinoza, 24, coming from Brazil, coming from Croatia, Venezuela. But we're looking at players from 19 to mid-20s. That's a big difference, too, where money is spent on players. That, example, when you pay $9 million, almost $9.5 million from Miami to Matias Pellegrini from Argentina, Estudiantes, he's 19, he's a left winger. Him, he's going to be sold in 5 years for maybe double that. It's like the Almiron and the Ezequiel Barco strategy and philosophy that we're seeing more and more. And this one by Miami is going to be a good one. But it's just an example. and it's to show right in front of everyone the age and the cost of transfers in and out. It shows you what it's going to cost. But even like Nashville, their biggest signing, biggest amount of money they'll spend this year for sure, is from Denmark, the German Henry Mukhtar, who has $3 million in transfer. So no, we are seeing a trend, I believe, looking at this list.
You know, for sure, that second club sort of scenario that you're referring to is very new. And I think that's a really interesting approach that MLS is moving into, and something I think that will benefit the league. We'd be delusional if we think this is someplace that a person would aspire to finish their career at this point when they're 19, 20 and not from the U.S. or Canada. So to bring these guys in from places in the past that would have held them and sold them directly from there to Europe into MLS for a couple of years, develop them a little bit further and then move them on, really does benefit the fans, because they get to see these players at a young age, and they're dynamic players often. And it benefits the player because they probably are going to make a little bit more money sometimes than they might make in some of those Central and South American leagues. And obviously it benefits the owners with the sale, right? So it is something that I think you're going to see more of. It's the Almiron effect. Like, he's put his struggles this year aside. He was sold. And I think that when you're a player from that part of the world, you look at MLS and you see that they're willing to move you on, or, you know, in Martinez's case, to give you a big money contract after that, after you prove yourself here. Either way, it works out for them. I mean, either you get paid here or you move somewhere else and get paid and chase your dreams there. When they show that they are willing to move those players on, which they hadn't been in the past, I think it really does open up the league to really truly compete in the global market, and we all want to see that, and we all want to see these guys move on too. You should, as a fan, you should want to see a constant churn there. You know, as I said a moment ago, it's silly to think MLS is at the same level as the top 5-6 leagues in the world. It's not, but that doesn't mean that you can't aspire to be closer to Mexico. You can't aspire to be one of the best leagues in North America and move those players on and follow their careers further than that. That's a perfectly legitimate way to be part of the world market, and I, for one, compliment them if that is the direction that they go.
And it's also a way to be part of the world market. Yes, you're going to spend more on players to bring them in, but you also have a higher potential of profitability on the same players. It's all well and good if you don't pay a lot for the player who's coming in, but you're not going to sell them. So there's that difference, or I would say that evolution of mentality of how you look at your roster, how you built it, and how you look at the potential players that you can actually make money off of going into the future. And of course, we'll come back and we'll look at the FA Cup in the second part of the show. But let's continue, Dwayne. We alluded to it. Let's talk about the CBA. The collective bargaining agreement finishes in 28 days, to be precise, and 12 hours. So we're starting to look and think about what could be the potential issues. What are the big hills, I would say, that the players are willing to die on this time around? 4 years ago, it was free agency. But we all seen what happened since then, how free agency is a disguised free agency. It's a very high threshold of eligibility to become a free agent. In your opinion, and just we'll start a discussion with this, Dwayne, which should be the hills they die on, and which one do you think will they choose as a hill to die on, if any? Those are two distinct nuances, I believe.
We've already sort of seen over the past year one hill that they are absolutely going to die on, and that, of course, is the charter flights. But I would put that into an umbrella topic of sort of working condition stuff that they're going to demand that they are universally across the league treated like, you know, professionals, basically, that they're able to, you know, get access to the type of stuff that makes it easier for them to compete at the top level. And I think that that's going to be a major situation for them, for the players. I think that the other thing that I'm really seeing when you read the comments, particularly from the MLSPA Twitter account, which you really should follow, they're quite funny sometimes.
Quite funny, and sometimes in just an emoji you can read a lot into it. But go ahead.
Yeah, I think that they want to simplify movement I'll put it in that general way, whether that be free agency, which I do think they obviously want to lower that age a little bit and make it a little easier for players to move at a part, at a point in their career where they can have a good effect and it can be a legitimate sort of mechanism for them to move to teams that they want to play in, places they want to play in, and get a little bit of a pay bump. I mean, right now, if you look at the free agency from the last CBA, the most effective signing in the history of a free agent signing is probably Drew Moore. And, with all due respect to Drew Moore, that's kind of a mid-level sort of signing, right?
And it's
They
one of the
want to see.
only effective ones. There's been more bust than not, and oftentimes it's because of the age required to become a free agent and the lack of interest by multiple clubs at the same time. You rarely see a big pay bump that you see in other sports and free agency.
No, for sure, and that's sort of the collective philosophy of the owners themselves that don't like to bid against each other, and in fact have a lot of rules in place to prevent that from happening. The players obviously would like to loosen that up considerably, but again, it comes down to the easy, making it simpler to move, getting rid of some of those mechanisms that we're all frustrated with, tam, gam, bam, jam, sam, all that sort of stuff. Only two of those were correct. You figure out which ones. But anyway,
I hope jam is just correct. Well, what could jam be? The Jamaican allocation money, or something else? Something that starts with J. Anyways, I want some jam.
Fair enough. The NWSL just added a gam to their the sort of situation there, so it's spreading, not loosening. But anyway, they don't. It just makes it more complicated for them to move, and that's not something that benefits the players. And I'm not sure the owners are going to necessarily be interested in eliminating sort of all this stuff that we make fun of them for. They're just not. They're trading the stuff still, right? Like that's tells me that there's going to be a fight there, and I'm not sure the players are going to be able to get much movement there right now. But like it has been the last two CBAs that I've covered, there has been slight movements towards what they want, not big sweeping movements, and I suspect that without a work stoppage, that's what it will be again right now, is there will be slight pushes away from that. There will be some loosening in terms of how players are moved. Maybe they increase the pool that's there. Maybe they simplify the, just call it salary budget or something, and make it one sort of type of money rather than three different pots. I think a lot of the players are frustrated with TAM, particularly domestic players, because it does sort of favor players that aren't American or Canadian. I mean, there are some TAM players obviously that are, but it certainly does, if you look at it, favor the players that are coming into the league from somewhere else. And I believe that a lot of the domestic players look at that as a drag on their salaries. Like, why is this guy coming in and getting, $1 million and I'm stuck on 300,000? That's kind of the sort of situations that they're talking about. But I'm not sure where the owners want to go with this. And you predicted yesterday that you think that we'll see a work stoppage of some kind. I said I was 50-50. That's bleak. I mean, in the past, I wouldn't have been that negative. I would have said like 90-10 in the past. So it's a scary sort of situation if you're a fan of this league.
There's a concept in my mind, and hopefully I can find the words to express it properly, where is this the CBA negotiations before the really important CBA negotiation? I mean, is last time in 2015, we did believe like this was the one before the big one. I think we're still one away, and I'm gonna use something that you mentioned on yesterday's show when you were looking at other sports that did have work stoppages over the last two decades in North America. It happens oftentimes after players have a certain amount of leverage that they can hold on for a long time. You mentioned having money aside by the MLSPA for sure, that it's there. They say they have enough for a long work stoppage. But pragmatically speaking, when you look at the median salary, which is more important to look than the average, the median salary, a couple hundred thousand, it could be enough, but it's not like it's enough easily. And I think once the big name player are willing to sacrifice their time and their couple years left of their career for the younger name, then we'll have a true leverage on the player side, and we'll have what we might have in other leagues in North America, like in the NBA, where higher percentage of the profit goes to the player than to the owners, and better work conditions, like you mentioned, and like charter flights and all that. So is this the CBA negotiation before the real important CBA negotiations, where maybe the next one, the players will cross that threshold of actually having leverage and being able to say, you know what, we're going to strike for a year if we have to, and you need to better our work conditions?
No, it's entirely possible. And I think the term, like how long the CBA lasts, will be a big issue in this as well. And it's not a sexy issue that we like to talk about, but the players probably want a CBA that's, you know, increases their rights and is shorter than what the owners want. The owners want stability. So that will certainly be something that we'll have to watch for as well. As I said yesterday, I'm not sure these players have the wherewithal to last an entire, you know, 6 months or a year without a paycheck. And I'm not sure the league wants that either, but I'm not, you know, you have to be in that position where you can. Right now, the owners have, you know, have all the money, and they, by shutting this thing down, by shuttering it for a while, they probably would save money. They wouldn't lose money. And it's unfortunate, but that's the case. And yeah, the players have to approach it with that understanding in mind. But look, I this is the third one I've covered, and I have never seen the association as aggressive, I'll say, as they have been now. So I do think that we are in for a fight, and I would be very surprised if this is done by the end of the month. I think that they go into camp without a CBA, and I think the players will report in the beginning. I think that there will be probably, I think the season will start, but the longer this goes, you know, the further the players get the leverage. And so that's when the lockout situation sort of arises, and you have to consider what the strategy there is. We said yesterday that we think that the CCL will be a big indicator with this. Once the MLS teams are out of the CCL, then, you know, there's not a lot of impetus for the owners to stay in this. I don't think they want to fight that fight necessarily. They want to get those games in. So look, it's a game of chicken right now, I think, and we'll see how this goes.
We have seen the MLSPA be a bit more open and public, and how they, not necessarily do demands, but how their players and their members are not afraid to change their social media picture into the picture that wear the t-shirts, like do the small little gestures that they can do all the way to now to indicate that there's going to be, I wouldn't say a work stoppage for sure, but there's going to be some issues, some not necessarily conflicts, because it can all be cordial, but you can't not agree. But it'll be a fascinating one when we look at other big CBA negotiations that happened in North America over the last two decades. Famous ones comes to mind: baseball in 1994. That's longer than two decades, you're going to say, but yeah. But there's hockey, there's NBA, and I think the most successful one, for at least the players' side, was the NBA. I think it might be the league in the entire world where the owners and the players have a relationship that is the most beneficial for both that I have ever seen in other sports. It's the only one where you're seeing the players, at least the perception of it, that they are the bread and butter of the league, and the league recognizes that the players are what makes the league and not the actual owners. I don't know if it's the one before we see this happen in soccer, and I don't know if the MLSPA has to make its homework and study how the NBA players did, but I think in the future, if you are part of the MLSPA, and if you're looking at in 10 years from now, and not maybe not the next CBA, but the one after that, where do you want to go and set up a blueprint of how am I getting to have the most amount of stability, financial resources, and better freedom for our players down the road, you might see a inclination to go towards more and more closer to what the NBA system is.
I think the players would like that quite a bit, to be more equal partners in this. And certainly you're correct that the NBA is the league that has the greatest sort of partnership between owners and, well, they don't even call them owners anymore. They call them, I forget what the term that they use, but they like to stay away from that term owners now. It's like leaders or something. But that said, the league that MLS takes most of its approach from is and where it's most connected to in terms of how they run the ship is the NFL. And if you look,
it's the worst of the whole sports. Like, money is not even guaranteed. Yeah.
Yeah, there. That's the opposite. That's the league that has the least amount of partnership and is the most sort of using them as sort of pieces of meat, for lack of a better way to put it, that they churn through, right? And that makes it difficult for me to see the owners willing to do. Look, the ownership groups within MLS are varied. They're in any league, really. So there probably are some owners out there that would be willing to have more of a partnership and could see the benefit of that. But there's probably an equal amount of owners that look at Major League Soccer and say, well, there's, you know, the field of players that we can draw from is vast. So if they don't want to play here, they can go somewhere else. It's probably an attitude that's out there. And that's unfortunate. So look, I again, 50-50. I honestly don't know where this is going. I will say this about both sides. There has not been a lot of leaks so far, so we don't really have a great indication of what is being talked about, if anything, right now. But certainly it does seem like, based on the Twitter account and based on what a few players here and there have said, it does seem like they're ready and they want to fight their fight this time.
Are we heading into a work stoppage? What do you think? Let us know on social media at 24th Minute for Dwayne, at Kev Larme, and at Soccer Today SPN for this show. You want to write us an email. If you're a player, I know some MLS players actually listen to us. If you are a player and you want to let me know, let us know what you think. Anonymously or not, you can always email us at sportspodcastnetwork@gmail.com. We'll take a quick break and come back looking at the FA Cup.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
If you like this show, you will love our Patreon page, patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. $2 a month will give you access to the Two Sawtooth Soccer Podcast. First show of 2020 will come out in just a few days. You'll find the $5 tier with 5 rings extra, Two Sawtooth Soccer Podcast included, Sports Podcasting Network extra, many more shows available on the $5 tier and the $10 tier, the documentary tier, with the Gold Cup documentary on its way. It's done. It's being loaded as we speak. By the end of mid-afternoon, it will be available for your listening pleasures for all $10 Patreon. And if you took advantage of the special offer in December, you will be able to get access to the documentary tier from your $5 tier as well. So that will be available later today on our Patreon feed and at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. Third round FA Cup, a few interesting matchups today, well, tomorrow and on Sunday, Dwayne, a FA Cup weekend.
Yeah, magic of the cup. Yeah, this is the weekend that I think a lot of people love the most, and there's a lot of reason to. You know, you get the, you know, lower league teams playing the big boys. You get to, you know, get see these little tiny stadiums with, you know, hot dog trucks that you can see from outside the or from the camera view. It's a lot of fun often, and you know, the reality is that most of the games end with the big guy winning, but every so often you get those upsets, and we get to hear those magical words, the magic of the cup.
Magic of the cup. There's obviously a lot of matchup. Wolves Man United is an interesting one, but I like the lower league matchup, right? I like to see, example, Port Vale, Man City versus Port Vale tomorrow. Chelsea Forest. I love this Chelsea Nottingham Forest one. Charlton United versus West Brom. That's a fun one. You have Fleetwood Portsmouth is another fun one. There's a lot of interesting ones happening in the next 2 days. Reading Blackpool is a a matchup of the Premier League of, what, 20 years ago. You have Brighton-Sheffield Wednesday, which is a great one. Millwall-Newport County. Bristol City, the team of our friend Simon Fudge versus Shrewsbury. Rochdale-Newcastle. Birmingham-Blackburn. That's another great one. Yeah, there's a lot of great matchups.
You got a Merseyside derby in there as well, if you like the all Premier League matchups, although that's not really my cup of tea in this. I think the one that interests me the most is Arsenal-Leeds, based on, you know, Leeds play in the Championship and Arsenal's play in the Premier League. You would think that there might be a chance for an upset, and that, of course, is a, you know, a matchup from the past that used to be much bigger than this. But certainly, yeah, a lot of fun, and I enjoy this round. It is something where you can see the good bounce from game to game, and you can see these upsets. Like I said, I think the FA Cup is a remarkable tournament, a remarkable event that is one of the highlights of the season for me. And it, you know, the irony of it, it's like March Madness, right? Like, it's almost more fun in the beginning than the end.
Yeah, because it's always going to be a Premier League team or something at the end, right? But you get a matchup like Crystal Palace versus Derby County on Sunday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Well, 9:01 a.m. Eastern. Derby County with their new player, Wayne Rooney, who actually got an assist in their latest game. The assistant coach and player, Wayne Rooney, will make his FA Cup debut for the first time in 2 years, this time versus Crystal Palace in London on Sunday. But you get great matchups like this one.
No, for sure. I mean, you know, Wayne Rooney is going to be a lot of interest for a lot of people in the Championship, for sure. But this is an opportunity for him to, you know, move them another step forward. I truly do love this event. It's obviously there's FAs, there's cups like this around the world because this is the original and a lot of people have copied it, but there's just something special about something that allows, you know, anyone technically to compete and try and win this. And I wish we had, you know, we all wish that the Voyageurs Cup would be more like this. Hopefully one day we get something like it, but it'll be a lot of fun. I mean, you know, obviously I'll watch City in the morning. It's not the biggest matchup, although it's called football derby, if you remember that is Ben Knight's team, Porville. So there's that, I suppose. He messaged me. I haven't heard from him in a while. He messaged me when it was drawn. So there you go. A lot of fun.
I used to play with Porville a few years ago in my FIFA career, because it's a team in the lower league, and I like kind of like the logo, which is how you choose your team when you choose a team in the lower leagues. But it's always interesting. You mentioned the Voyageurs Cup, and eventually one day, if it's open here, let's have a fun topic to finish the show. If it ever becomes truly open, do we start Soccer Today FC? And do we just start it so we can actually say we play a game in the Voyageurs Cup?
We're going to need some ringers, Kevin. We're going to need some ringers.
We'll get some ringers. I'll call Justin Mapp, and you can call a few, and we'll get some ringers. We can lose. I don't care. As long as we say, yeah, I played in the Voyageurs Cup.
Fair enough. It's a great, great sort of thing to dream about, right? I mean, realistically, like, I'm looking at these matchups, there's not a lot of really huge underdogs in here. Most of these teams at least are in the football league. In fact, I have to look carefully to see if there's any non-football league teams in here. But how can you not love this?
There isn't.
How can you not want to win? But a lot of teams don't, and that's the other thing that we always will talk about. Like, on Monday morning, we'll be looking at these results, and inevitably there'll be a premier team that's in that sort of 10 to 16 range that throws the game, and we all will go, well, why did you do that? And it is a question. It's money is the reason, of course, but why do you play this game? Why would you not want to take a run in one of the cup competitions? It always baffles me. Why not try and win something? Because that's something your fans will hold on to for years, a lot more than finishing 12th year after year after year in the Premier League.
Yeah, you're right. The only non, I think, league team, and I don't know that team, so for me not to know it, Fylde, F-Y-L-D-E, where is that? Is that from League 2, or are they from the conference? It's the only one that might not be from the league, but I think they're from League 2 this year.
Yeah, I'm just looking right now. Yes, it is a non-league team, so I'm not sure where they play. I can tell you in a half second.
Probably the conference somewhere, for sure. But the only, I believe, non-league team actually left in the FA Cup, Fylde, or, well, however you pronounce that one, F-Y-L-D-E. LED playing Sheffield United on Sunday at 9 a.m. So you'll get a Premier League team destroying Field Day for sure.
Well, maybe. We'll see. You never know. Sheffield could throw that game. As I said, they are in the conference, by the way. I just looked it up. Plays in a little park with 6,000 seats. So, they're probably a pretty decent conference side with that.
And
that's
the game to watch, right? To see a non-conference team face a Premier League team. That's the magic of the Cup right there.
No, for sure. And it doesn't happen a lot, but there have been some major upsets in the past, and they're always a lot of fun when they happen. The pitch invasions and excitement all around. So, good day tomorrow. We'll all sit back and watch the FA Cup and cheer for the underdogs, unless you're playing them.
Speaking of underdogs, one of the greatest underdog story in the history of Canadian soccer will be told later today on our Patreon when we explain and tell the story of Canada 2000 winning the Gold Cup and one of the biggest victories of an outsider at a major tournament in the history of the world of soccer. And you'll find this later on today on our Patreon page for the $10 tier in the documentary section at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Laramie, and this show at Soccer Today SPN live Monday to Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific. We'll be back Monday. And until then, as always, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.